Hello, and welcome to the Health Headlines Unpeeled podcast, where we peel back the science behind the headlines to help you make informed decisions about your health, nutrition, fitness, and well-being to lead a more productive and satisfying life. I'm Stephen Clark.
And I'm Jill Joyce, and we are excited to begin the next episode of Health Headlines Unpeeled from the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Oklahoma State University. And this week, we're taking a slightly different spin on things. So, Stephen, do you want to tell us what that's going to look like?
Sure thing. So I think one of the things that we want to do in this podcast is bring in experts or faculty to talk about their areas of expertise. So this week, we're going to start with one of our graduate students, Christina Shirillo, who recently gave a talk to a football team on the topic of healthy weight gain. So we thought this might be an interesting topic for people, especially this time of year when athletes are getting ready to ramp up their programs for their fall sports. And I think that you all will enjoy this interview.
And as someone who works with tactical athletes, as we call them, or first responders, I'm often having to also teach these guys how do you healthfully gain weight. So it's appropriate for a lot of populations, honestly.
Yeah, and as you'll hear once we get into the interview, it gets pretty deep fairly quickly. There's a lot here. But again, we hope you all enjoy this. We hope you learn a little bit. And without further ado, let's move into the interview with Christina.
That sounds great. Let's listen to the interview.
All right. Well, joining us on the podcast today is Christina Shirillo. And Christina is a graduate student here in the Department of Nutritional Sciences. And Christina, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about how you got to Oklahoma State University?
Okay. Do you have a lot of time?
As much as you want.
I'm just kidding. I am originally from Louisiana. I did my bachelor's degree at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. And there I got a degree in nutrition and dietetics with a goal to become a registered dietitian. And I was very passionate about research and science. And I knew that there were only a few programs in the U.S. that focused on really the research behind why we do what we do and impacting lives. So I sought out Oklahoma State and found the program here, and really have just loved it since. So I've been here since, gosh, feels like forever, 2017, and I am in my final year of my PhD. So I completed my registered dietitian certification here as well. So a lot of growth has happened here.
Great. Well, thank you for that introduction. I know you work with Dr. Emerson, a faculty member here in the department. Can you tell us a little bit about your research area as a doctoral student?
Sure. I work in the Laboratory for Applied Nutrition and Exercise Science under the mentorship of Dr. Sam Emerson. We focus really on identifying risk and screening tools for identifying risk pertaining to cardiometabolic disease risk. So cardiometabolic disease, you can think of as obesity, type 2 diabetes, something called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So it's kind of this umbrella term for several conditions that are largely driven by some of our choices in our lifestyle, but also other factors like genetics as well.
So this sounds like a topic that we need to bring you and Dr. Emerson back to discuss in more detail, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. Today, we're going to talk about sports nutrition. Really broadly, can you tell us how you got into this field or maybe your experience in sports nutrition?
Sure. So I was actually an intern in the athletics department at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. There, I worked primarily with football, and I was doing a lot of grunt work. So I was making shakes, food for the athletes after their workouts. But then I, of course, was an athlete myself in college and high school. So I'm really passionate about athletics, and I read about it on my free time. So I don't do research with athletics, but I do find it very fascinating. So also my better half is a football coach, and so he's kind of roped me in involuntarily to helping his football players. So that's a little bit of how I enjoy sports nutrition.
Well, very cool. Yep. So that's kind of how I approached you to do this podcast today, right? So you told me you had gone down to Houston to visit with your better half's football team. Mm-hmm. And what was the topic of that discussion?
So we talked specifically about weight gain, or what athletes might call good weight gain in sports. and particularly in football. So how to really gain the weight that gives them the power, the endurance, the strength to do the hard things that they have to do.
Okay. So let's back up just a little bit and maybe put yourself in the position of a football player, mm-hmm. maybe. Why would they be interested in this? What would be the point yep. of asking you for this kind of information?
Sure. In football particularly, depending on the position, of course, various positions have different weight goals and different roles on the field. But with the area of football that Shane coaches, he coaches defense, and some of his players seek to gain weight really for that power. When you're looking at Division I football, a lot of these guys are really, really strong. And so if you're not as strong as the next guy or stronger, then you really might buckle at the competition, I suppose.
So. Yeah. So when you were down in Houston visiting with the team, how long did you have with them?
Not long.
Yeah, typically, right?
Yes, about 30 minutes, and that is not enough time. So I did what I could in that time, but about 30 minutes.
Okay, so you had 30 minutes with them. You're a registered dietitian. You're well on your way to a PhD. How do you prioritize the things that you're going to try to communicate with them in 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm. So I think of my glorious training as a dietitian, and we learn a lot about really assessing a client or patient and figuring out what they need. So first rule of thumb really is to understand the target population, understand maybe a little bit about their lifestyle, some of their habits. The goal would be to take sort of an assessment in the beginning where I can assess this person and their daily habits and then address sort of deficiencies in those habits. But the goal really was to understand the population. And then from there, I thought of, you know, what are a lot of people think whenever I go and give these talks that I'm going to tell them exactly what to eat, or I'm going to give them this, you know, meal plan that's going to have X, Y, and Z on it, and they're going to take that away and do what they need to do. But if it were that way, then my job wouldn't exist because a lot of people can do that. So really my goal was to teach them to find sort of their why. Why do they need or want to gain weight? What are the barriers that they face for gaining weight? And how can we then address those and develop goals that help them to get there?
So what I hear you saying is that part of your goal here was to empower the athletes to be able to make decisions on their own behalf.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's a much longer lasting strategy for behavioral modification.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good deal.
Yep.
So you told us a little bit about how you go about prioritizing the things that you're going to communicate. Now let's dive into that in a little more detail. So what's the first thing you start with when you visit with athletes?
The first thing that I start with usually is goal setting. So first we talk about, well, let me back up here. In a perfect world with more time than 30 minutes, I would likely give them some sort of assessment or intake form where I would figure out where they are, and then I can address what they specifically need. And this scenario did not have that time. So the first thing we talked about was something called SMART goals, which sounds really cliche. Everybody probably knows what that is. If you don't, SMART is an acronym that stands for specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. And really this governs goal setting for me, especially in athletics. So the first thing we did was talk about what are realistic goals, because these athletes are not going to realistically gain 20 to 30 pounds in the off season. And a lot of them think that they can. So I sort of dialed it back in with them and helped them to figure out those goals. And then we talked about how to address those.
Typical young male football player, exactly what you just said. They think they can easily put on 20 to 30 pounds. Probably not always eating the healthiest of food to be able to do that. So let's talk about what is a realistic amount of weight that you think the typical defensive line player would be able to pack on.
Yeah. Typical rule of thumb, we wouldn't want to recommend any more than about half a pound to a pound and a half per week. A pound and a half per week is on the high end. So I like a sweet spot between a half a pound to a pound per week. And what this does is this ensures that the athlete isn't gaining too much fat, because of course that can impact performance, but also that they're gaining some of that lean mass, which is really what they're trying to gain. When we see athletes try to gain too much weight too fast, that can lead to adverse consequences like fat gain, which is not the goal. Of course, we're going to gain some fat with weight gain in any circumstance, but if we're gaining too fast, we're usually not packing on that lean muscle. And so really about a half a pound to a pound per week is the goal. And a lot of them were shocked to hear that. So I'm glad that I was able to address that leading into the talk.
It's complicated by the fact that they're not only improving their dietary intake and obviously increasing their overall energy intake, but most of these athletes at this point in the season are also undergoing strength and conditioning programs, right?
Yep.
So you've sort of got to balance energy expenditure with energy intake, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you talk to a high-level athlete about how much is enough,
mm-hmm.
And how do you account for the amount of weightlifting or the amount of running? Mm-hmm. How do you go about dealing with that?
The first thing is it's going to be really challenging to try and gain a ton of weight in the summer. And that's really just because of obvious reasons like sweat. It's just physically more taxing to exercise, train in the summer. And so typically we don't recommend necessarily trying to pack on that weight in the summer. It's usually in that winter off season. That's usually the best time. They have a good training stimulus. They're usually weightlifting, going through some program with their strength and conditioning coaches. Of course, balancing energy expenditure with intake is never going to look the same for anyone. And it's also going to be pretty nuanced, and we're going to have to tweak and adjust as we go. And this is why giving broad lectures or talks about this is complicated. But there's really a few key points that I communicate to the athletes prior to even diving into some of this after we talk about goal setting, which is that one, you can't just simply eat more protein. That's not going to get you to where you want to go. And there's such thing as protein overload. So these athletes tend to think that, oh, protein builds muscle, I'm just going to eat a ton of protein all the time. But really what that's doing sometimes is watering your plants after it's rained. It's just soaking them through and not doing much. I always tell them that we're going to talk about, the fact that protein is not the thing that you need to overconsume so much. But also the two really important things that you need to gain good weight are a stimulus, a training stimulus, and an energy surplus. So what I mean by that is consuming more calories than you're burning. And so that becomes challenging with these athletes because sometimes they eat to fullness, but really eating beyond fullness is what they need to do sometimes to really get to their energy goals or their calorie goals. And so teaching them that if we approach it as simply as you need to eat more and you need to eat more frequently, then I can kind of jump in there and help them figure out what that looks like and what type of foods that is, maybe the breakdown of the different types of energy sources, and address a lot of those areas where they have questions that even we as dietitians don't think about. So balancing energy expenditure with intake, to go back to your original question, is really complicated, to be honest. And it's not complicated on our end, but it's complicated when you try to teach that to someone else.
So you mentioned the importance of protein intake for promoting lean body mass, mm-hmm. right? And obviously, I'm going to come to you with the question that you would get as a dietetic student, as a registered dietitian, as a sports dietitian, and that question is going to be, how much protein do I need?
So if you're a Division I football player, really any player on the field probably needs about 1.2 to 1.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. So I know that number probably doesn't mean much to some of these listeners. And really what that looks like is a good bit of protein every day. So that means that we're going to probably consume upwards of, a solid serving of protein, maybe 4 to 6 ounces at every meal. And we're also going to be consuming a good bit of snacks that are protein rich. And we're also going to be potentially taking some sort of supplement to aid in meeting those goals. So it's a good bit of protein per day.
So let's break that down just a little bit more. So you said 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram. So if I weigh 250 pounds, how many kilograms do I weigh?
So we'll do this math together. All of you listeners, take 200 pounds and divide that by 2.2.
Can we do 250?
250,
there aren't many 200-pound linebackers,
yeah,
right?
Let's get realistic. So 250 divided by 2.2, that's 114 kilograms. So then you're going to multiply that by, let's say, 1.6. That's how many grams of protein, which is about 182 grams of protein that athlete would need per day.
And do you, this is not a fair question,
yep,
but on average, what does the typical adult consume in a day?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, but I can say what the recommendation is for the typical adult, and it's about 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. So for, you know, a female that weighs, 130 pounds, that could be anywhere from about 50 to 65. Don't check my math. I'm not very good at mental math, but that's a rough average in my mind, which you can tell is a lot less than what these athletes need.
I think typically what we see average adult consuming is somewhere in the range of 80 to 100 grams. Of course, as you said, that varies wildly, mm-hmm, right? But so we're talking quite a bit more than what the average consumer consumes,
yes,
each day.
Yes.
I think you mentioned this, but maybe it's important for us just to highlight this. So if you're consuming, we're going to round up because this is easier math. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're consuming 200 grams per day,
mm-hmm,
right? You don't want to do all of that at 7 p.m. at the training table.
Right.
So how do you split that up over the day?
Yeah. That's a really good and important question. Really, like I mentioned earlier, I talked about watering your plants after it's rained. Really, that's the concept here. You know, many athletes, and perhaps myself included, before I got the education that I did, assumed that, oh, I can break this protein amount up at any given point and in any quantity throughout my day. And that is not true. And this is really, really important. Our bodies maximize about 20 to 25 grams of protein at once. So, and that really is, a lot of research tells us that really is independent of our body weight. There's some research that doesn't agree with that, but I would say the majority agrees with, we can utilize about 20 to 25 grams of protein per sitting, so per meal or snack. So really, that's where emphasizing to these athletes that eating frequently is very important, and also not overeating protein at a sitting is important as well. We're never going to avoid that situation where athletes sit down at training table and had a hard practice and eat a ton. That's not really what I'm talking about here. But when we're talking about daily what our goals are and where our meals are going to fit in and how we're organizing those meals and snacks, we really need to think of reaching that 20 to 25 grams of protein per meal goal.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of discussion over the last year or two about plant-based protein diets, or using plant-based protein, mm-hmm, as opposed to, let's just call it, animal-based protein. So is there any data to suggest that plant-based diets are more effective or less effective, mm-hmm, at promoting lean body mass?
So I'll provide a disclaimer here. I haven't read a ton of that research, but I do recall reading a few papers on that subject. And the research that I know of really demonstrates that either there's no difference between a plant-based diet or, you know, a typical, I wouldn't say animal-based diet, but one that contains animal sources of protein. Okay. There's no difference on necessarily muscle protein synthesis. However, I do know that there's some research that shows us that performance may decrease on plant-based diets. Now, you have to keep in mind that plant-based diets are really, really hard to adhere to and to actually implement in a way that will maximize performance and muscle protein synthesis for athletes. It is possible, but this is where working with a registered dietitian is very important. So some of this research, I haven't dug into those methods and what exactly they did, but that is something to consider, that perhaps there were some deficiencies there that weren't addressed. I would say from my perspective as a dietitian, I would not necessarily push a plant-based diet on an athlete. If that was their preference, I would work with them and, of course, help them to meet their goals. But if we're talking about performance and maximizing lean body mass and really addressing some of their nutrient needs, which are much higher than the average non-athlete, I would say that eating some animal products will really help you to do that.
So bacon is good?
You I knew you were going to ask that question. I don't like to use the word good and bad when we talk about food.
I'm proud of you. Food is neither good nor bad.
Yes.
Yes.
I think bacon can be good for reasons that, you know, are different from perhaps the way that most people think of nutrition. So
chocolate-covered bacon is good at the training table.
It's good for the soul. It is very good for the soul.
Very good.
Yes.
Okay.
And it can help you reach your calorie goals.
True, right? So let's think about, again, your typical athlete that you might work with. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of drilling down. I'm asking you to be specific in a very theoretical way.
Yeah.
But they're at the training table. What sources of protein would you recommend to athletes?
Yeah. So if an athlete was coming in from practice on a random night to training table, and they were wondering what to put on their plate to meet their protein goals, I would encourage them to look for foods like chicken, fish, beef, poultry, seafoods, pork. I would also encourage them to think of other maybe plant-based sources of protein like beans and legumes, grains. Dairy is also a good option that can give them some important nutrients and some calories that are easier to kind of pack onto a plate, like cheese or sauces. So I would really want them to think of choosing a solid protein option, but then also adding in maybe those non-traditional or plant-based sources of protein too, because again, those have essential nutrients that we need and also are packed with fiber, which is a very important nutrient.
Great. So all of what you just said applies easily to lunch and dinner, or at least classically lunch and dinner. Some people may call it dinner and supper. I'm not sure, but whatever. The midday meal and the end of the day meal, right?
Yep.
So let's think about training table in the morning. What does that look like?
So if an athlete was heading in for breakfast, I would tell them, or I would be thinking to myself, this is a very easy way to get in a lot of protein and a lot of calories and nutrients. That's for a few reasons. One, breakfast foods or conventional breakfast foods tend to be a little higher in calories than maybe foods we would eat at dinner or lunch. Also, breakfast foods contain nutrients that aren't as high maybe in other foods that we would eat later in the day. So an example would be eggs. Eggs are an excellent source of protein. Excellent source of protein.
Boom. Well done.
And they are what we call they have a high biological value. So what I mean by that is the body uses that protein very efficiently in the egg. So I would encourage them to consume eggs. I would encourage them to think of other foods like breakfast grains. So oats, granola, cereals, we want those to be whole grain. I would encourage them to think of foods like fruit for fiber and other nutrients. But if we're going back to the protein, you might be thinking, well, Christina, maybe someone doesn't like eggs. Well, in that scenario, we can also look at sources like breakfast meats. So those can be good options for protein.
Like bacon?
Yes.
And sausage?
Sausage.
And Canadian bacon?
Yes.
And hash browns?
No.
Okay.
Hash browns are a great carbohydrate source, not a great protein source. So I would point them in that direction, and I would also encourage them to think of dairy options for protein in the morning. So things like even a protein shake could be a great option. Yogurts, Greek yogurt has usually anywhere from 10 to 15 grams of protein per serving. You can think of milks and cottage cheese. Those are all great sources. One of my pet peeves is we hear sometimes that peanut butter is a great source of protein. Peanut butter, it has protein. That's the truth. But if we think about how many calories peanut butter provides for how many grams of protein it provides, it isn't the greatest source of protein. So I would like to say I really do not want to discourage peanut butter intake. Emphatic, do not want to discourage peanut butter intake. But to all the athletes listening, peanut butter is not the greatest source of protein. It's a great source of calories and other nutrients, not the greatest source of protein. It'll give you a few extra grams per day, but really don't think of peanut butter as your main source of protein.
What about Nutella?
Do you like Nutella?
I love Nutella.
Nutella. Is it or new?
Either way.
Okay.
Whatever. It's the hazelnut spread that you can get.
Yes. So, I have a jar of Nutella in my hand right now.
Did that come out of my cabinet over here?
It did.
Yeah. It's a resident.
It is. So Nutella is a great way to get in extra calories. It has some good nutrients in it, of course. But you can think of Nutella as... for those of you who maybe don't know, it's that chocolate hazelnut spread. So it has a good bit of hazelnuts and chocolate in it, but it also has a good bit of added sugar. And we really want to minimize our added sugar intake and try and maximize our intake of those sugars found naturally in foods. So while peanut butter does have a little bit of sugar in it, usually that's a natural occurring sugar.
Yeah. So a serious question then.
Yep.
And because I think we've all seen more nut butters on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So what about almond butter, cashew butter, name your favorite butter? Are those any worse or better than your standard peanut butter?
I would say, generally speaking, no. They're all a butter made from various nuts or seeds. So they're all going to be pretty rich in fat, and they're all going to have pretty similar calorie content per serving. So usually anywhere from 190 calories to 200 per 2 tablespoons. However, if we're thinking of someone who's consuming this in excess or a lot of this per day, we can think of some of these different nut butters as having different types of fat that may be more health promoting. But generally speaking, I would say not a huge difference, and they're all going to be rich in those fats that are heart health promoting.
Okay, great. Well, I apologize for taking us down the peanut butter
I started the peanut butter hole.
All right, so we've talked a little bit about proteins in the diet. And earlier when you were talking about how to spread those proteins or the protein that is consumed over the course of a day, you have I think you used the word supplements.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, howdy, that is a big can of worms if we open that up. Can you provide some more context for what we're talking about when you talked about using supplements as a way to augment dietary protein intake?
Mm-hmm. Supplements are an unregulated item on the market. So that is the first thing that I think we need to address. Supplements are not regulated like food is. So they're not policed by the FDA. And so really at any given point, you aren't entirely sure of what your supplement might contain. And so this is where it's important to work with a registered dietitian so they can help you to understand what supplements are going to be the best option and not contain banned substances, especially as athletes. So things that might pop up on testing that you really don't want to have happen to you. So I really want to emphasize here that supplement use is pretty strongly discouraged by registered dietitians for that reason, because we don't really know what's in them. Supplements vary from company to company. So dosing is very interesting. So if I were recommending a supplement, and what I meant by a supplement earlier is there are some good supplements that are regulated by what we call third-party testing. There are a few different options for third-party testing. I'm not going to go into all of those today, but just know that when you're looking for a supplement, you want the supplement to be third-party tested. Perhaps we can talk about that on a follow-up episode.
Yeah.
And really what you're looking for, perhaps a lot of football players particularly think that they need to be taking these weight gaining supplements, and they're called that. They're called weight gainer. And in reality, those supplements contain way more than you need. So what we're really going for here is usually we're utilizing supplements after a workout is really where we're working with supplements in athletics. So once those athletes are done with their workout, sometimes we have protein shakes ready for them. And that doesn't contain 50 grams of protein per serving. That contains 20 to 25. And that's coming from just a standard protein supplement. So there are a few different types of those. There's, of course, the all-famous whey protein, which is perhaps one of the most studied and is very good at stimulating muscle protein synthesis. So usually this is the type of protein that these athletes are consuming after a workout.
Yeah, I feel like this could be an entirely different podcast altogether.
Yes.
Right. There's a whole lot to be unpacked as it relates to whey protein, casein protein, combination of those two, fractional protein synthesis rates, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Right. But maybe a really a big take-home message for athletes or even weekend warriors out there is that when you are finished working out, you do have a window of opportunity post-workout where you do want to optimize protein intake. Mm-hmm. And so what's the overall recommendation there?
Yeah. So we used to think that that was a very short window. We used to think that that was immediate or within about an hour of exercise or training. Now we know that's actually a longer window than we thought. So about 1 to 4 hours after training or exercise is really when we see maximum muscle protein synthesis. So, of course, we see that continue later throughout the day, and we still want to be stimulating muscle protein synthesis with adequate intake. But really, it is pivotal for athletes to get in a little bit of that protein after a workout within that 1 to 4 hour range.
Yeah, and again, we could go so far down the rabbit hole here, but not only is it protein, it's also carbohydrate.
Yes. Right? So we've seen that a combination of carbohydrate and protein is actually optimal. So that's where adding, you know, maybe you're grabbing a protein shake after your workout, but also grab a piece of fruit with that. Side note, and this might be good news for some of you out there, but chocolate milk is actually one of the best ratios of carbohydrate to protein for post-workout nutrition. So we always want to get in some carbohydrate with that protein after we exercise or train.
Yeah, so that's interesting you bring that up. I've been training a lot over the past 6 to 7 months and started using some version of chocolate milk. Not to name any brands out there, but been using that immediately after I'm finished with my workout, just because it's easy to have a cup or two of chocolate milk and
yep.
It tastes really good. I think it's a pretty good recovery food.
Yeah.
And it's easier than doing a whole protein shake, blah, blah, blah. And especially if you're on the go.
Yep, absolutely. You can easily buy plain milk, add chocolate to it, or you can just buy chocolate milk. Easy to take down and isn't as bulky and dense as those protein shakes are.
Yeah, so. And has more calories than your normal milk.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Because there's some sugar in there typically.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, but overall a decent recovery food option.
Yep.
And a decent source of protein.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've mentioned a little bit about protein shakes. What other kinds of foods do you anticipate athletes consuming over the course of the day to help meet their nearly 200 grams of protein that they need?
Yeah. So really it seems like perhaps it might be maybe more complicated than it is because that's so many grams of protein, but really I try to get them out of the mindset of I can only have chicken, beef, fish, poultry, seafood, whatever for lunch and dinner. I try to help them to see that perhaps maybe your additional snack per day that we want you to add in is just another meal. It's just another meal that contains one of those protein sources. Or maybe that's a serving of Greek yogurt, or maybe that's, some other second breakfast option. So really helping athletes to see that snacks don't always have to be snacks. They don't have to be popcorn. They don't have to be, granola bars. These can be additional meals that look like our breakfast, lunch, or dinner that we just eat at a different time per day.
Yeah, so basically what you're describing is the Hobbit diet, right?
What is the Hobbit diet?
Hobbits eat all day long.
Okay, yes.
Right?
Yes.
They have a second breakfast. They've, they've got something in the afternoon. It's the Hobbit
yes,
diet.
Yes, the Hobbit.
Maybe we need to market the Hobbit diet. Okay. So one of the things that I think is sometimes misconstrued, even by people in our own profession, is we're talking about dietary protein intake, mm-hmm. right? We need protein to be able to promote lean body mass development, for example, or immune function, or all of the different, functions of proteins in the human body. But in reality, right, what we need are amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we make it more complicated,
mm-hmm.
right? But thinking about ultimately what this cell is using are amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
They're not using whole protein, right?
Mm-hmm. Amino acids are, a lot of people take those, of course, as a supplement. But really helping people to understand, one, of course, the human body uses amino acids. So it's not using that intact protein that we eat. It's going to break that down into amino acids, and it's going to use those for muscle protein synthesis. However, our body needs those amino acids in a certain ratio and in balance. And so when we consume individual amino acids as a supplement, we might be throwing that ratio off quite a bit. In fact, we really don't see, in recent years with research, we really don't see much benefit from consuming branched chain, specifically amino acids or other amino acid supplements. And it perhaps might be because we're throwing off this equilibrium or balance that we need to achieve muscle protein synthesis.
I think once again, it comes down to moderation, moderation, moderation.
It does.
And that we, what we really want to try to get people to do is consume nutrients through foods, not supplements.
Correct.
But we also recognize that there are limits on the amount of food that an individual can consume, and supplements may be useful sort of in between meals to help make up some of those differences.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. We've talked a lot about protein in this episode, and obviously carbohydrate or energy intake is also going to be really important. I think there's probably enough there that we can revisit that topic in another episode. So I know you visited with those athletes about protein, carbohydrate / energy intake. Kind of what was another one of your messages that you shared with them?
Yeah. So we talked a lot about really striking the balance between encouraging athletes to consume the foods that they love, but also encouraging them to see food in through somewhat of a different lens. Food is really sort of their ticket to next level performance, aside from, of course, their training stimulus and their discipline and all the other areas that add to their football repertoire. Mm-hmm. But nutrition and food is very, very important. And so I like to encourage athletes to start to learn how to strike the balance between, well, I want to enjoy cookies, pizza, burgers on occasion or with my friends or however often you want to, but I also need to understand that I have heightened nutrient needs and I really need to address those with one, food sources, not supplements, but also I need to pay attention to some of those foods that I'm eating to optimize performance. Because If we consume some of those other foods in excess, we can be increasing our risk for other issues. We can also be packing on fat tissue that athletes don't particularly want in some positions or sports. And so I really encourage them to start to understand and work with them with striking that balance. Because, of course, we never want to discourage athletes or any person for that matter from consuming the foods that they love, but we need to teach them how they can do that and achieve their goals, whether that's performance or health goals.
So. Right. So there, I feel like there's one loose end that we need to tie up. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it way earlier in this episode, and that was coordinating dietary intake with energy expenditure.
Yep.
So when you're working with athletes, how do you estimate energy expenditure? How would an athlete know what their needs are?
Mm-hmm. So, and this is where working with a registered dietitian, even your strength and conditioning coaches becomes very important, because our body has a pretty good feedback system with telling us when we need to eat and perhaps when we're full. But for athletes, we can kind of overwhelm or underwhelm that system sometimes. And so it becomes a little more challenging for an athlete to rely on their hunger or fullness cues. I usually would encourage an athlete to go visit a registered dietitian that has equipment and methods to assess energy expenditure. So those would be things like a metabolic cart, where an athlete would lay down, you put this funny looking bubble over their head, and we collect the gas that they breathe out. And that can tell us a little bit about the amount of calories that they burn. And then we can do a bunch of different numbers and look at things that tell us maybe how many calories they burned from total activity throughout the day. There's other methods. There's some equations that we can get some variables about the athlete and punch those in and get an average of what we might think they're burning per day. And then there's just general rule of thumb, where we can assume that some of these football players particularly need to be eating about 4,000 to 6,000 calories per day. So that's just an overall general recommendation that we can think of for those athletes.
Okay, great. That helps a lot.
Yep.
We started this podcast by talking about the athletes that you visited with when you were in Houston, Shane's defensive players, right? And I just want to make it clear that we haven't really talked about female athletes yet, or even the differences between what I'll refer to as strength athletes or maybe power athletes versus endurance athletes, because those requirements are also different, right?
Correct.
So this is a complicated topic, right? And humans are complicated creatures, and it's hard to come up with a one-size-fits-all that works, obviously, for everybody.
Yes.
Do you have anything to say about working with female athletes or some things that you would consider or recommendations?
Yeah. So female athletes are a little bit more complicated and a little more complex than male athletes. Female athletes can't simply just approach nutrition, you know, their performance, aesthetic goals through the lens of this transaction. And what I mean by that is females have to pay a little bit of a closer attention to maybe how much body fat they have, for example, or, you know, how much weight they are losing is important as well, because we know that when females drop below certain weights or fat amounts, that they can experience potentially pretty adverse outcomes. Specifically, they can lose their menstrual cycle, which has long-term consequences that can have effects on our mental health as females. And so females really have to, I would strongly encourage female athletes to work with a dietitian. Do not seek to do these things on your own, and please don't seek the help from someone who's unqualified, because it's very complex and there's a lot of variables to consider.
Great, thanks for sharing that wonderful advice.
Yep.
As we wrap this episode up, I would like for you to go ahead and share maybe two or three key points that you would like our listeners to take away.
So I would encourage athletes, one, to think about why they want to do this, to really approach their, maybe the direction they're going with SMART goals, like I mentioned earlier. So that's that acronym that really helps with goal setting. So always make a realistic goal that is achievable. I would then encourage athletes to really think about just paying attention to consuming simply enough calories per day if weight gain is the goal. So if there's something simple I could recommend, it's let's start with at least consuming enough calories, and then we can adjust later. And then third, I would tell them to really avoid just eating everything or anything in sight and gaining too fast. And as a subset of that, I would then encourage them, in order to avoid that, to please work with a registered dietitian, because they can really help you to get there and get to the goals that you have for yourself.
Awesome. Well, thank you for visiting with us today, Christina. This has been wonderful. I think we've clearly identified that there's a whole lot more here that we could discuss.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll get the opportunity to do that in the future. But I think this is a great start. We appreciate your time. And we'll look forward to visiting with you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Well, great interview, Stephen, with Christina. And I'm really excited for future deep dives with other experts.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It was a lot of fun to record that one with Christina. So as we wrap up this episode, I guess I can say that another one bites the crust.
Touche. And because it was kind of sports oriented, I will tell you all that we are giant pokes flans.
Oh, no. Well done.
Well, we just want to thank our listeners for letting us unpeel health headlines with you in a slightly different way this week. And we hope that you join us in our next episode, where we'll continue to peel back the science behind the headlines. Until then, thanks for listening.
On behalf of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Oklahoma State University, thank you for listening, and we'll talk again soon. Cheers.